Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My next guest is a candidate for United States Senate. Diane Serra will be on your ballot with the LaRouche Party, and Diane is generous enough with her time now to join us. Welcome, Diane. Thanks for making time for the program.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for having me on.
You got on the ballot, which is obviously why you're on the program today. And, you know, it wasn't long ago that former Governor Andrew Cuomo was doing a lot to try to make sure it was a lot more difficult to get on the ballot. How did you get on the ballot? Was it difficult to do it?
Yes, and it actually was more difficult this time than last time. In 2022, when I ran against Schumer, I became the first and only independent or minor party candidate to get on the ballot because the requirement of signatures had been moved from 15,000, which was already very challenging, to 45,000 in the same amount of time. This time, in this race, 2024, once again, I'm the only statewide independent candidate to succeed at getting on the ballot. We turned in close to 70,000 signatures with an all-volunteer group. Robert Kennedy Jr., I think, turned in about 140,000 signatures, partly from paid petitioners, and ended up being removed from the ballot on a technicality, not for the signature shortages, but it's extremely difficult. He spent over $1 million. And frankly, I think it's a suppression of elections and free speech if you can't have minor party candidates on the ballot.
Well, we always ask candidates when they're on this program to introduce themselves to listeners. Tell listeners a little bit about yourself and why you are running for U.S. Senate.
Sure. I am a trained classical musician. I was a political organizer with the late Lyndon LaRouche for 35 years. He passed away in 2019. I worked on four of his presidential campaigns. I am very concerned. I think the number one issue right now is peace. We are headed in a very dangerous direction in a couple theaters, whether it's Europe or the Middle East. And the United States, rather than shipping weapons everywhere and encouraging war, should be working, in my opinion, with China, with Russia, on reconstruction, on economic development incentives, and as a stabilizing force, not an incendiary provocateur.
Well, you said recently that you want the United States to get back to its American revolutionary identity and collaborate with Russia. And I found that a kind of a bizarre juxtaposition, this idea of thinking about George Washington collaborating, working with Vladimir Putin, who is trying to erase Ukrainian sovereignty. But maybe you can elaborate a little on that.
Sure. First of all, I don't think that's what Putin is trying to do. John Quincy Adams was our first ambassador to Russia. Russia has been our partner in many ways, from Catherine the Great and the League of Armed Neutrality to assisting in the Civil War, and then we were allies against the Nazis. The problem is that we have had a kind of revisionist history here, both about our own origins, which were not to be a new junior British empire based on racism and slavery, but actually to eradicate colonialism and to create the conditions for many free republics all over the planet. And we seem to have forgotten everything we learned in World War II and what we said about never again, which was particularly clear when we poured $5 billion into Ukraine to overthrow their government and bring a certain unsavory elements into power over there.
Vladimir Putin has spoken literally in January 2022. The Kremlin was publishing pieces on his views of the history of Ukraine, that Ukrainians are actually Russians, that they really aren't their own sovereign identity, that there should be one Russian state. There were massive mistakes made at the end of the Soviet Union. He said the same thing to Tucker Carlson when Tucker Carlson went over for what I guess you would call an interview or whatever that was. Vladimir Putin has made no illusion about his desire to subsume the Ukrainian state here.
Could I ask, do you think that if we don't stop Putin there, that he's going to invade all of Western Europe? Is that your view?
I don't know what he's going to do. My view is that he's, number one, made it clear that he wants to subsume Ukraine, kill the Ukrainian leadership and replace it with Russian puppets. He has said so. And
he has not. That's absurd. And I don't really know why you're such an apologist for a regime that has shut down 13 opposition parties, banned the Russian language, and has revived the legacy of Nazi collaborator Stepan Bandera. Now, we don't have to destroy a nation because it's fascist. We worked with Germany to reconstruct, but they made Bandera's birthday a national holiday. You can see that the Russian and Soviet Union people who lost 27 million people to the Nazis would be a little concerned, especially when they killed 14,000 people in the Donbass when Putin was acting in good faith, trying to negotiate for those two breakaway republics to remain as part of Ukraine. That is well documented, and you can laugh if you want, but that is very well documented. I know what I'm talking about on this, and you are just spewing propaganda from the people who want World War III.
Diane, I'm not trying to spew propaganda. I hear that.
That's
you, okay. I hear that you want to have a serious conversation about peace, and I want to say this. I think we all should be worried about nuclear war. I think everybody listening should. I think leadership around the world that is serious about this should. And I am grateful for any candidate who presses the issue and makes us more conscious of the risk. I think that's a very good thing. I think the idea that this is, that what I said, which is an encapsulation of what Putin and the Kremlin have said, is somehow propaganda, while you're positioning everything you just said would have come straight from Russian media, which is why I think you are a regular on Russian
media. Not at all. Victoria Nuland herself bragged about her role in sabotaging the end of this war, which was almost occurred only 1 month after it began in March of 2022. When Turkey negotiated, they brought in the Ukrainian and Russian delegation. They were ready to sign. They had initialed the agreements. Ukraine would remain neutral, not join NATO. The two republics would have special status, etc. And what happened? Boris Johnson flew over there, told Zelensky, don't agree, just keep fighting. You just keep dying for our mission and don't make peace. Ukraine would be in far better shape. 400,000 people would probably still be alive. And Victoria Nuland now just recently admitted that she had a hand in sabotaging those agreements. So it's not Putin. That's from Victoria Nuland herself.
Everything that you are saying is exactly what the Kremlin says. There is nothing here that you just said that indicates that you think Vladimir Putin is anything but a good faith actor who's been victimized by mean old NATO and the West in Ukraine. The reality is that invasion...
Well, there's good reason to believe that. I mean, what is our good faith? We promised Russia that NATO would not move one inch to the east, and we moved 1,000 kilometers to the east. Then Ursula, whatever her name is, Angela Merkel, bragged about how they were lying to Putin. They weren't negotiating in good faith. They just wanted time to train the Ukrainian army to go to war with Russia. So the West has admitted in public
to defend against Russia. No. What you just said is totally, totally inaccurate here. Yes, the expansion of NATO has shook the Kremlin. That is true. The rest of that was pure propaganda. NATO is not invading countries, Diane. Do you understand?
Really? What happened in Libya?
Diane,
wasn't that a NATO operation? We invaded.
It's your position
we were dropping humanitarian bombs on
Libya.
It's
your position that Ukraine was planning to invade and bomb Russia? That's the plan?
Ukraine was shelling people in Donetsk. They had killed 14,000 people in the Donbass.
Okay.
That happened again. 2014
everything
and
that you're describing about the Donbass and what you call those independent regions. Everything that you are describing there is straight out of Putin's playbook, straight out of it.
It's just true. If I said gravity exists and Putin happened to say gravity exists, it doesn't mean I got it from Putin. It just means it's true.
Fair. Okay, where's Putin been wrong? Where do you think he lies?
I don't think it's a matter of lying. I think it probably was a strategic miscalculation to begin the special military operation. I maybe for reasons felt that was the only course of action, but I would have wished there was some other way to settle this. And I think it is a problem that you clearly the Western negotiators were not acting in good faith. So that was a miscalculation.
You really think that the West just didn't want peace here? That, boy, Putin wanted
Correct.
This deal done. Yes, that's what you think.
I think, why did we overthrow the government of Ukraine? Why were we so invested in that? I mean, that's another thing. Nuland bragged about it, the $5 billion.
You keep saying we. Do you think Ukrainians were happy with the corruption in their government, with these Kremlin puppets there? You thought they
were... Well, there's a lot of people who may be unhappy with the corruption in their government. I'm extremely unhappy with the Biden administration. I would not welcome someone coming in here and overthrowing it.
Have you talked to Ukrainians about this?
Yes, many.
Okay. Talking to Diane Sayre, running for U.S. Senate, and Diane is on the ballot in the LaRouche Party, going to be on your ballot here. So I'm just going to put a bow on this part of it, and there's a lot of other things I'd like to talk about. But I want to say it again. We should be very concerned about nuclear war, and I know you are. So who do you think is the biggest threat when it comes to possible future nuclear war?
I'm not sure. Some people, like Colonel Douglas McGregor, have said they are very concerned that Israel might be the first to use a nuclear weapon, which everyone knows they have, but we're not allowed to say. I don't know if it's them. I don't know if we would create such a provocation that Putin would feel obliged to do something. You know, he's just announced a change in their nuclear doctrine, which is that explicitly if a non-nuclear power, i.e. Ukraine, backed by nuclear powers, i.e. the US-UK, launches an attack onto Russia, Russia reserves the right to use a nuclear weapon, even if the attack is only with conventional weapons. And that is because he correctly pointed out that if Ukraine uses long-range missiles to strike deep into Russia, those missiles can only be guided by Americans or British, depending on which system they use. So he says then we would be de facto in a war with NATO. So that, I think, is very alarming. I think many people have been trying to get us back from this abyss, but I think we cannot act as if Russia has no legitimate security concerns. Putin expressed in December of 21 that Ukraine could not join NATO. He would not tolerate nuclear weapons being placed in Ukraine, and that he would not tolerate ethnic cleansing of the Russian-speaking population in eastern Ukraine. So I think we do have to not be tone-deaf and actually hear when people have security concerns. We certainly didn't want nuclear missiles on our border. I don't think we'd take kindly to Russia putting nuclear missiles in Canada or Toronto or something. So I don't think it's unreasonable to listen and to try and come up with something that respects the security concerns of both nations. But go on.
I'm listening. I just want to say about, you bring up the Donbass a lot. You don't think that there's any leverage that Putin thinks he can gain by bringing up all kinds of sometimes very debatable or false flag. I mean, they're shooting down planes. Russia's got their hands on all kinds of nefarious activity in Donbass. And he wants to claim to the world, well, that's a primarily culturally Russian place, and we just want to support them. And, you know, if they can't respect that, then we may have to invade all of Ukraine. I mean, none of that is plausible. It is, to me, entirely implausible and obvious propaganda.
As I said, this would have all ended in March of 2022 had it not been sabotaged by then British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and various people from the U.S. State Department. So I think that Russia has, look, Biden said himself when he was in Poland that he thought Putin had to go. I mean, that is so none of our business to dictate to other nations. I know we do it all the time, but it really is not correct foreign policy to tell other nations who should be running their country or how to run their government. And I think what the West is deeply afraid of is this new alignment of nations, namely in the BRICS, who are meeting in Kazan, Russia, October 22nd through 24th, who are talking about new payment systems, new currencies, and they do represent about two-thirds of the world's population and over 50% of the production of goods on the planet. So that's a major power. And interestingly, the BRICS nations don't run around dictating to each other how to run their government.
Listen, I don't disagree that when Biden or anybody says, you know, Putin's got to go, that's not a helpful loss of your emotional control. I agree with that. I think that that's a clumsy moment. I also think it is obvious that he has to go if you care about Russian people. If you care about...
But the Russian people just reelected him with, I don't know, what, 87%?
I think he got 105%, Diane. It was like 105%. I don't
know. That's the U.S. elections. I think you're mixing up. But
you
anyway.
Think Russian elections are more legitimate than American elections? Is that what you're claiming here?
From my own experience, it looks that way. And that doesn't mean they're good either. But the U.S. has a terribly low bar. I mean, I don't know if you saw what happened to my vote in 2022, but it literally, the more votes that came in, the fewer votes I had. It was quite amazing 2 years ago.
Alexei Navalny is dead. Dissenters are in prison.
Yeah.
Dissenters are in prison, and you're sitting here
and
going, well, the real problem is the United States.
You seem to forget that I worked with someone who was given a 15-year jail sentence on conspiracy charges, had all of his publications shut down, and then what turned out to later be ruled an illegal involuntary bankruptcy organization. And that was 40 years ago. And it hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse. We have unbelievable censorship in this country. And that's why I really appreciate your having me on here in spite of these disagreements, because I think the way you deal with disagreements is not by gagging people and jailing them, but have a debate.
Absolutely.
Prove that someone's wrong.
Absolutely. And that's why we've had a tremendous amount of investigation of, let's just take the 2020 election. Now, you've been saying in this time around, you've been saying we've had massive fraud in American elections, and you've taken pains to say not small scale fraud, massive, massive fraud. When the evidence does not support that, and it has been debunked in unbelievably pretty much all of it.
No, not true. No, it's not. I mean, look, I'll tell you something. This goes back in 1976, and I was 10 years old at the time, so I wasn't involved in it. But Associates of LaRouche filed a lawsuit in New York because they showed that thousands of dead people had cast votes in the vote that elected Jimmy Carter. And they went to court. And the court found, indeed, thousands of dead people had somehow cast votes, but they said, we can't change the outcome because it's a private, you know, secret ballot. You can't prove that the dead people voted for Carter. So they left it. But so, and I don't want to change the outcome of elections. I think that some elections maybe shouldn't be certified until you can find out what happened. But I know what happened to me personally in 2022. In Rockland County, where I live, I had 6,212 votes when I went to bed. And when I woke up the next morning, I had 277. That happened. And I went to the Board of Elections, and I did not get a satisfactory answer or a record on their time-stamped vote counting that made any sense. And I discovered something similar in 40 counties in the state.
Okay, so
where my vote literally disappeared overnight.
Diane, I don't have any information about your particular race. And that is true that I am not prepared to talk about the evidence in your election. What you are claiming is that you got something like 0.0001%, and it's claiming that you got 0.00001%.
No, it went from 1% to 0.5% after they finished there. And I actually have reason to believe it was much higher, but that's a longer... I'll show you the PowerPoint and the screenshots. That's a longer discussion.
We are not living in a country where the results are flipped by nefarious purposes, and that should be a great comfort.
Why are you so certain of that?
Because it's been investigated so extensively.
People had massive evidence.
Listen to Stephen Richer, a Republican
conceded.
In Arizona. Right?
What?
I mean, a Republican in Arizona, Stephen Richer, is a great example of the allegations and the conspiracy-addled thinking that happens when people think, well, you know, Trump actually won, or, you know, this state got flipped illegally. And every single claim that they threw at this Republican, or Brad Raffensperger, a Republican in Georgia. Every single claim got investigated and debunked. There's a dozen here, a dozen votes there. Every claim of massive fraud has been debunked.
And let me tell you something. You could investigate yourself. In 2020, the state of New York, the Secretary of State certified about 338,000 more votes than people who voted, if you took the vote totals by county. And no explanation was ever given to that for how that could have occurred. And that was documented simply using records of it, publicly available information.
Okay.
338, that's like 4%.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, you know, but that's enough in a close race to change.
No, 4% is a huge, a huge issue. And happily, it is not anything that is commonplace, or there's not any evidence that that is what is happening in really almost the vast majority of races. It is extremely well documented, and that is a very, very happy thing. I understand you're in the LaRouche party, and LaRouche was kind of Q before Q. So, I mean, I understand.
That is really an outrageous thing to say, and that's not true. He warned in 1971 that Nixon decoupling the dollar from the gold reserve system would lead to a state of perpetual war and fascism in the United States, and he was right on the money. And he was meeting with leaders like Indira Gandhi and the president of Mexico to reorganize the financial system and create a level playing field where every single nation, as FDR envisioned but died before World War II ended, that every single nation should have a right to be economically sovereign, developed, eradicate poverty. And that's what LaRouche dedicated his life to. And you have no right to say these ridiculous things about him without having read. You know, if you want to argue about something he said in his paper on how Bertrand Russell became an evil man, or his economic policy on the question of potential relative population density, then we can discuss policy.
We're going to hear the music in a second, which means we've come to the end. And Diane, I want you to give people where they can learn more about you, a website, campaign information, et cetera. Where do you want people to go?
They should go to sareforsenate.com, and my name is spelled S-A-R-E. Sare rhymes with scare. That's easy to remember. Sareforsenate.com.
I want to thank
you.
You're right. We need to keep talking about all of this, and I appreciate it. That is Diane Sare, LaRouche Party candidate for U.S. Senate. And any candidate that is on the ballot, we honor that time, and they deserve a right to be on this program, and we offer that to everybody. We've got more connections coming up.